Krishna.
Dhanavad.
Among the great heroes of Marvel multiverse, such as Captain America, Spider-Man, and many others, there is one supreme character called the One Above All, who is responsible for the existence of all life in the multiverse. He is beyond time and space and alternates between appearing as male and female. He is described as the supreme being who is omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient, and is above all cosmic powers and abstract entities. So, Maharaj, what is this? How should we take this Marvel phenomenon? As misguiding pseudo-religion of New Age, or as a springboard for potential truth-seekers?
Srila Saraswati Thakur, he did not favor Vedic-based speculation. Or any other type, actually. Shastras Jayika, how he is very insistent on the purity, the fidelity to revealed truth. And not cherry-picking the revealed truth, or such ideas and assembling them and coming up with one's own amusement, what will amuse one, some idea of God that is amusing in the sense of it's entertaining. The higher thing has become the subject of entertainment for the lower, right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Omni, and the, what is it? Das Mool begins with Omnaya Prahat Tattvam Harim Iha Paramam Sarva Shastram Rishabdim, like that. No, Sarva, Rasa, Rishabdin. So, and Guru Maharaj would say sometimes about the Gaudiya Math that out of hand they dismissed everyone and everything. Said, but if you quoted some Sanskrit, if you said, in the Puranas it says this, you gave some actual reference, then you'd get their attention and they would deal with that. But as a great atheist said once, and just in general about argumentation, he said, that which is asserted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence. Right. So, very often, they're cherry-picking things they've heard from different religious or philosophical traditions and assembling that, and we assume they, have noble intentions. Right, but we don't want to be members of that construction company that who specializes in the paving of the road with noble intentions. And what to speak of that? In regard to Gauranga Mahaprabhu, whose appearance day is approaching, there was one Bengali gentleman. He thought it would be a good thing to tell everyone about Mahaprabhu, Gauranga. So he made one book where he took something from Chaitanya Bhagavat, from Chaitanya Charitamritam, from Chaitanya Mangal, from many different places. what he found appealing, and he assembled those things and presented that. And many people appreciated that. And even Srila Guru Maharaj mentions that his college days, he said, I read that book and devoured it like nectar as a college student. But he said he found when he came to Gaudiya Math and made reference to that book to Srila Saraswati Thakur, and what is this? He said something like, Nijaboge Gorila Goranga. He said, Nijaboge means what is enjoyable by him, or, and I'm using the word amusing. He's presenting a version of Goranga that is pleasing to him. But we see in authentic scriptures, the authors invariably, in the beginning, there, when they state what is going to be the subject matter of that book, you know, Vastu Tattva, the Supreme Absolute Truth, they seek blessings from the higher Vaishnavas, and what is the third thing? And they praise the Lord and his devotees. I'd have to think of what the third is, but along those lines. So Kaviraj Goswami saying, he's legally blind, he's arthritic, he's in his 90s, he could leave the world at any time. And he's saying, it's a mystery to me, it's miraculous to me that of what my pen is producing. And he said, but it is not I who am writing this, but Madan Mohan is moving my hand and making me express these things. Veda Vyas is considered a Shaktivesh avatar. Right. So Saraswati Thakur quoting Bhaktivinoda says, Naitihasa Nikalpanam. These are not historical, the pastimes of Krishna, they're not historical occurrences, neither are they imaginary. So they're not the product of the imaginations of men. So with regard to that book on Gauranga, Saraswati Thakur said, no man of substance will find anything appreciable there. So we will see in various places, in various pastimes, that it will be mentioned by devotees, such as Murari Gupta, when Mahaprabhu reveals his Varaha Bhav. He shows up on his doorstep as the Varaha avatar, and after entering and tells Murari, offer some prayers. And Murari Gupta says, how can a fallen soul praise you? How can a fallen soul myself, like myself, properly or adequately praise you? Actually, only you can praise you. Only you can describe you. That's very interesting. From the point of view of the uninitiated, they think, arrogance or to demand praise. Why does God need to be, is he feeling insecure? What is this that he's always seeking praise? But actually here it's coming more to the point. He's saying, only you can praise you properly. And how is that done? He's saying, by your expansion, Ananta. As Kaviraj Goswami will express in the beginning of Charitamritam and the glories of Nityananda, Balaram, by extension, Ananta. So we're told Ananta Dev with his thousands of hoods, and we're told the pastimes of Krishna, and in this case, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, they're like jewels, and jewels you keep in a very safe place. Where are they? Within the mouth of Anantadev are those jewels of descriptions of the Leela of Krishna or Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So Anantadev, who is by extension an expansion of the Supreme Lord, he has the ability to properly glorify him. And we're told that he is since before the beginning of time, and he has not exhausted those glories. And it's like a competition. He is glorifying him, but he's becoming more glorious. He's not a static, a condition of stasis, right? He's becoming increasingly glorious, so Anantadev glorifying, he's becoming more glorious, and it's going on ad infinitum. As Guru Maharaj said in one place, the infinite sleeps on a bed of infinite. That type of infinite. So it's the Lord, by his extension, who can offer proper, suitable, appropriate praise, or those who are divinely inspired. Right? Which means the devotees. Even his angsa, his expansions, they're in the mood of servitors. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsa Britya. Right? So, but still we see this, the human tendency to seek the divine or divinity or the best. Like now they have the Winter Olympics and someone will do very well or do the best. So in Bhagavad Gita, and we may appreciate that, in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Shabda ke purusham nashu, I'm the ability in man. So when some person does something extraordinary or better than everyone else, in a sense, it's a, what's the proper word? Like vibhuti, representation of the best, means a representation of the infinite. So if we wanted to be generous with regard to what was the subject matter mentioned here, we would say they're searching for who is omnipotent, who is omniscient, etc. But we're told from the beginning, as we said, Nija, Boge, Gorilla, Goranga. It is not meant for our amusement. If anything, we are meant for his amusement. So all these things are presented ostensibly to amuse people, to entertain them. So they never come to the understanding that actually everything belongs to him, including ourselves. He's the supreme subject. He's not an object for us to enjoy. We can say Atma is a type of subject, Paramatma is super subject, and the Adhoksaja realm, and Krishna is the super, super subject. But be that as it may, really, Krishna is the subject, and we are the objects of his affection and devotion. We're told the definition of Bhagavan is Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashasya Shriya Jnana Vairagya Yushchapi Shunam Bhaga Itigana, who has infinite magnitude of Aishwarya opulence, Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya, strength, power, fame, knowledge, beauty, renunciation, who possesses these qualities to an infinite degree is known as Bhagavan. And we know in the lower portion of Vaikuntha world, southern hemisphere of the Vaikuntha world, Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan, and then in the upper, Dwaraka, Mathura, Vrindavan. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada, even showing gradation in Krishna conception, would say, perfect, more perfect, perfect pastimes, more perfect pastimes, and the most perfect pastimes. So even within the omnipotent absolute, there are gradations. And the devotees will say, Swayam Bhagavan is at the right hand of Srimati Radharani. That is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. But in their search, we hear in the Bhagavatam, in the nutshell slokas, and they're echoed again in the beginning of chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam, that everything indirectly or directly is connected to him. Everything directly or indirectly is a representation of him. So that would be a generous view of these things. But if someone wants to get something substantial connection with divinity or the infinite, it has to have divine backing in the divine backing. And that means descending from the upper world into this plane through the agency of Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav. The scriptures are not the imagination of the rishis. Right? We're told, Jnaninas Tattvadarshina. Hear from those who are Tattvadarshi, Tattvadrishi. They're seeing, experiencing the truth and the truth personified. And that perception, that conception is passing through their consciousness into this plane. That means descending from that realm into this realm. That is divine revelation. Not that someone, they read a few books about Indian philosophy and religion and a few other books and this and that and then thought this is something that would seem to be highly marketable to people and let's combine this all together and throw around terms like omnipotent and omniscient and male, female, what did we leave out? What is it originally? A comic. What does comic mean in one sense? I mean, just for the purpose of this discussion, we could say a comedic representation of these things. And that's really, it's nothing more than that. Any other question?
There is a question from Susanna Kamala. She sent her question on Facebook.
Where is she from?
It is not mentioned here.
Oh, okay.
What is the use of the competitive spirit? Why do we compete with each other? Is there any higher purpose for competing?
Well, if it is, there's the competition of exploitation, right, that we're aware, you know, jivo jiva shijivanam, Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest. And then there's a competition of dedication. So in this world, in the world of exploitation, one living being is living at the expense of another. That's how you thrive here, is through exploitation. in the spiritual world, and we're told this world is a perverted reflection of the original. In the spiritual world, you thrive through dedication, by serving others. When I was first in Vrindavan and going to the different temples, and I wasn't aware of the schedule of the deities, that after noon, when they have the bhog offering and the prasadam and the arati, then they rest until, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock. So I wanted to go to the Radha Damodar temple, and I got there at the time that the deities are resting. So I had to wait at those, at that time, the gates are locked. And this is many years ago. So I sat down somewhere and started chanting Krishna Nam on the Tulsi Mala. What I didn't know at the time that I know now is I'm sitting in someone's courtyard of their, because of that sort of ragamarg architecture of Vrindavan, where it wasn't clear to me that this was someone else's property. So I was thinking, like, if I was in the West, someone would call the police and have me removed. But this is Vrindavan, and I'm sitting there chanting, and I see out of the peripheral vision of my eye a little boy's hand pushing a plate with some sweets on it, and then pushing a glass of water. And I see there's a plate of sweets, a glass of water, and I turn and look, and there's this little boy who's around 9 years old or something. He said, "I am Brijbasi, and seva is my dharma." Because he could see the look of surprise on my face. But I thought, oh, he's actually happy to serve another person. I'm sure his mother sent him, but still, there was some genuine feeling, like he was happy to do this. Whereas sometimes, in other places, there's almost a kind of resentment or deprecation associated with service, to serve others. As though that's the lower position. When you reach the higher position, just so many people are serving you. Like Guru Maharaj said, people think the position of the guru, oh, everyone is serving. Said actually though, the guru is the servant of the disciple, as much as the pujari who takes the fruit, washes the fruit, peels the fruit, makes it nice, is making it fit to be offered to the deity. You could say, in a sense, the pujari is serving the fruit, is the servant of that fruit. And then it becomes offered to the deity. And then what? Afterwards, once it's been offered to the deity, touched to the head as worshipable. So the guru, you know, cleansing the disciples through divine instruction. Dibyam jnanam yato dadyat kuryat papa sasangshayam. The disciples are becoming cleansed and offerable to the Lord. And once they're offered to the Lord, they're worshipable. So Guru Maharaj concluded, from this point of view, then we see actually the guru is the servant of the disciples, although apparently the master. So, why did I say that about? No, but the question.
The question was, do competition.
Competition. So, it's hard for us to imagine a world where everyone is competing to serve, to be in the servitor position. Not the Lord of all I survey, right? Actually, the servant of one and all. In this world, we have to, it's reasonable for us to consider that the land, the air, the water may be, what's the word? Enemic, like an enemy of us. The very air we breathe, the water we drink, therefore we have to use filters and this and that. We're always concerned. So the very environment may do us in. But we're told there's another world where, you know, toyam amritam, the water is nectar, right? Bhumis chintamani, the soil is chintamani, and chinta means spiritually conscious. The soil of the spiritual world is spiritually conscious, as is the water, it's all nectar. And everyone and everything there is serving everyone and everything else there. Lilanuku, it's all what is favorable to Lila. So much so that Raghunath Das Goswami, in his prayer, one of his prayers, says, Yat kinchit trigumaki katamukam goshte samastam samastamitat. Lila mukunda doyata lilanukulam param. That even the insects, the creepers, everything in the dham, in the spiritual world, is mukunda doyita. It's very dear to Mukunda. And lilanukul, favorable, supporting the pastimes. So therefore worshipable. So we see an inversion here, that in the spiritual world, there's a competition of dedication. That's where competition is good. When Srila Prabhupada arrived once in New York, and I got to be his servant for like 15 minutes, I think that's all he could tolerate. But it occurred to me that Prabhupada, he probably entered more buildings that had just been freshly painted than any other person in history. Because the devotees, they painted the temple, and it was always right before he came, it was like, don't touch the walls. So, because devotees would hear that in another temple, they had done this or that, and they made their temple very nice, and Prabhupada expressed some appreciation. So as he was about to arrive in their temple, they repainted everything, bought some new things. They tried to make it nicer, or as nice as possible. So everywhere he went, and he saw from year to year, some improvement. So Prabhupada was remarking how nice the temple looked, and how the devotees had worked so hard to make it so. And he had been talking a lot at that time related to book distribution, but not limited to transcendental competition. And so I suggested to him, I said, is this transcendental competition? Like, this temple did that, then the next temple tries. And he was smiling and nodding in agreement. And he said, just like the Braja Gopis, one group is trying to, they're competing in service to the other group. Right? So this is, you know, pure competitive spirit. Right? But But they're also thinking, when they see others serve Krishna nicely, they're praising them for that and then thinking, how can I improve? We know when Gopu Kumar newly arrives, newly, I mean, it's, these words are of this world, but it's like his first day in the spiritual world, in his fully activated swarup as a cowherd boy, although it's an eternal position. And we know that when he and Krishna see each other, because first he's waiting for Krishna to come, and we hear, for because of the cows, the Gauraja, so much dust is in the air. So you see this big cloud of dust moving, but if you start seeing some form in the cloud and hearing some musical sounds, and gradually the forms are revealed to be Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys, and the cows, and they're coming back at the end of the day of cowherding, playing their flutes, singing and dancing, and Krishna and Gopakumar make eye contact, and they start running toward one another, and they embrace, and Krishna faints. And all the people, the Brijbasis, are disturbed. They think maybe like Pralambasura, this is some asura in disguise as a cowherd boy, and he's caused Krishna to faint. So I thought, that's his first day. As soon as he arrived, everything's going great and perfect, and now everyone there hates him. And they want to get rid of him. But Balaram knows everything and calms everyone, and then gradually Krishna awakens and says, how could you live without me for so long? In a very sweet way. And then they go to Yashoda Bhavan, Nanda Bhavan, for the dinner. And Krishna is bathed and Balaram is bathed because they are covered from, you know, Gauraja, the dust from the hooves of the cows, from all the cow herding the day, and they take dinner with Nanda Maharaj. And we're told that one of the specialties of Srimati Radharani is her so-called Manohar Ladu. Means like, it's mind-stealingly good. If you eat it, you'll lose your mind. It's that good. The extraordinary, the taste. And so, and Radharani, we know, on the pretext of having a boon from Durvasa Muni that whatever she cooks will taste sweet as nectar, Yashoda can enlist her in the service of cooking for Krishna. So the plate's there with the Manohar Ladus, and Krishna takes one, Gopakumar is on the other side, and his line is connected to the family of Radharani, whose brother is Subal. And Krishna tastes this ladu, and he goes, ugh, what is this? And we're told, then Chandravali and her group, they're like, yes! And Yashoda shoots a look to Radharani. Krishna tosses it to Gopakumar and looks around. Maybe your family, they like these kind of things. Throws it to him and he takes that. Then he tastes it. And it is, in fact, a Manohar. He loses his mind. It is the most wonderful, extraordinary, nectarine substance he's ever tasted. And then he looks at Krishna, and Krishna starts smiling, because Krishna was just joking. then Chandravali and her group, they're very sad, and Radharani's group, and they're all very happy. So that's like transcendental competition. But generally, the mood of the devotees is to appreciate the devotion of others, because it's genuinely moving to them. So they see someone has devotion to Guru, Vaishnava, to Krishna, to Mahaprabhu, then they cannot but praise that and hope that by associating with and serving that devotee, that some of that may come to them. That's what they're thinking. Not competitive in the sense of eliminating the competition kind of idea, but rather expressing appreciation, recognizing, and we see even in this world, the superior athletes, musicians, artists, etc., when they see someone who is really good at the very thing that they do, or so much better, they can't help but recognize that, unless they're just totally envious and blinded by their envy. But generally, we see even the competitors at the Olympics, when they see someone does something extraordinary, they recognize that and they realize, oh, this is the person who is deserving of these honors, because they just surpassed everyone else. That shows some competitive spirit, but also this non-envious sort of recognition and appreciation. And then they think that I may improve. By what I've observed in them, I can improve. In that way, it's a good thing. But not Schadenfreude. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his confessional songs, Amara Jivana, etc. That Schadenfreude means experiencing joy at the misfortune of others. There's a little of that in what I told, but that's high in the spiritual world, where everything is made out of sugar. It's all sweet. Like we see, they make the candy structure. It's like a house and little to everything, and everything's made out of candy. So actually, children are right. They know that there's a world made out of candy somewhere, and they're right. It's called Goloka Vrindavan. Madhura rasa is the liquid sweetness of that's comprising everything there. Really. So this tension or competition between the gopi groups is to inspire them to go deeper and to serve. It seems inconceivable that they could offer themselves anymore, but yet they do. So it's a competition of dedication. But we do see sometimes they rejoice at the when they get Krishna and someone else does not. And that's why the song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we see in the sentiments of Raghunath Das Goswami, they cannot even tolerate hearing about the competition, thinking that it brings sadness to Srimati Radharani. But those are very high and very serious things. Right? It's not to be imitated, but just understood. Then we understand how much love and affection they have. They can't tolerate seeing the paraphernalia of the opposition, hearing their names, anything about them. But that same person, Raghunath Das Goswami, who threw away the leaf cup with the butter leaf cup that was from Saki's Stali because it's connected to Chandravali, Radharani's competitor. In his book, Mukunda Charit, the other group, they have their say. They're there. It's not like he's not writing about them, but so these are very high, very divine things. But in his writings and the writing of Sri Rupa, the opposition, they say very, very clever things. And it gives the Radharani and her group the chance to rise to another level in their response. And all of this is giving increase, ecstatic joy to Krishna and everyone. So it's very beautiful. There's the famous song of Narottam Thakur, where it says, Kam, Krodh, Lobha, Moha, Matsarja. And it mentions, you know, lust, anger, and all of these normally undesirable qualities. And it's mentioned for each one that, well, anger could be used in service like Hanuman, the type of anger he employed, and setting Sri Lanka afire and helping Ramachandra to reclaim Sita, Kam of the Braja Gopis, and different things. But Gurudev would sometimes say, but Matsarja, envy, there's not a parallel given for that. That you can use your envy in this world. Right? Matsarjam, nirmatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam says in the beginning, no room for envy of the devotees. Because ultimately, who's the greatest devotee? Srimati Radharani. Aparadha, aparad, aparadha. Is what is against her, and by extension, her servitors. All service to Krishna is being transacted through her. So to be offensive or envious of the devotees indirectly is to be envious of her. That then, you're Krishna bhajan. If it doesn't culminate in Radha bhajan, it's useless. It's worthless. But that's this world. But we see in the writings of Rupa Goswami that. One famous verse comes from the mouth of Chandravali, and it's pray. We could say it's actually envy, but this is in the spiritual world, expressed toward the flute of Krishna. But it ends up indirectly being praise. So she is speaking indignantly about the flute, saying, who is this flute who is intercepting the nectar that is meant for us gopis, that's coming from the lips of Krishna? This flute is intercepting all of that nectar. And what is this flute? A dry piece of wood. She said, nir rasa, means has no rasa. They're all double entendre, the words, they have double meanings. Because he's using the word rasa, but nir rasa means with it's dry. Right? And what is it? Chidralina. Holes, like we know, flutes have holes, but the word for hole is the same word for faults. So he said, no rasa, full of faults, right? And a male on top of it all. Not a female. The flute is a male. She's saying, what is this? But we're told that the bamboo on the banks of the Jamuna, they're like crying tears saying, our son, the flute, look at, he went far. Look how well he's doing. He's in the hands of Krishna, always at the lips of Krishna. Because the gopis are saying, wait, what the flute has, we want. And this is intolerable situation. And even Radharani, that's from Chandravali, and another place, Radharani calls the Braja gopis for like Ista Goshti, have a group meeting, and she says, I know what it is that is troubling us and the cause of all of our problems. And they're like, oh, what? She said, the flute. So they make a conspiracy to get the flute away from Krishna. And they think, that will be the end of all this trouble. So they're sometimes speaking in apparently critical ways, but this is very pleasing to hear. And in an inverted way, is a type of glorification. So when Chandravali is condemning the flute, or expressing her envy toward that flute, it's showing you how exalted is the flute of Krishna. That's very different. That's in that realm where everything is saturated with that particular type of sweetness. But here, we should be cautious about these things. And not in the name of, transcendental competition or dedication, want to see the misfortune of another aspiring servitor. Guru Maharaj said one of the hallmarks of progressive devotion, or the Madhyamadikari, said when they see another devotee is doing well, they actually have some joy in their hearts. And I think we see, without getting to Kanishtha Madhyamala, but we see that in the group of devotees, when someone is newly recruited or comes, how happy the devotees are to see that. They're very pleased and overwhelmed with joy to see someone newly connected. But we're told the Madhyam position is that when they see another devotee is evolving and developing and increasing their dedication, they're very happy to see that. And if the news comes to their ear that someone may be in an apparent stage of regression, it gives some pain to their heart. They're never happy to hear that. Even if it was someone who was at a time apparently offensive or whatever, they're never happy to hear that. But they celebrate the developing devotional mood of the aspiring servitors. Yes.
Maharaj, if Jivatma is...
Jivatma.
Is subjective. Paramatma is super subjective. And Krishna Bhagavan is super, super subjective.
Yeah.
And Krishna himself praising and putting higher than himself a pure devotee. Can we call him super, super, super subjective?
You could. But it doesn't really mean like that. Just stick with Atma, Paramatma, with subjective, super subjective, and super super. So just, that's enough supers. But what I'm saying is, the reason I mention that is because Atma, there's a heading, Paramatma Jivatma, with Atma as an overall heading. So, in this world, we're the subjects, and there's the objective world. But generally speaking, in Guru Maharaj's system, subjective means beginning with Paramatma, but sometimes just for clarification, saying the Vaikuntha world, that the Paramatma world, that's the super subjective realm. And it's the lower hemisphere of the spiritual world, so Goloka Vrindavan would be the super, super subjective world. That means then it's highest level of expression. Here we're using super, supra, like that. What is its highest level of expression? That's why I told before, Prabhupada's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So he's saying there's degrees even in the perfect world. So Vaikuntha, 2.5 rasas. Right? Vaikuntha janidopara madhupuri tatrapi rasotavad. Guru Maharaj says, Rupa Goswami, he just, in a single leap, he goes from Vaikuntha to Mathura, meaning bypassing Ayodhya on the way. But if we went in a more linear, incrementally, we'd say the Vaikuntha world, 2.5 rasas, means Shanta, Dasya, and then in the case of old-time servitors, the beginnings of Sakya, friendship, of a type of a certain type of friendship with a mixture of awe and reverence. But then in Ayodhya, and there you have Lakshmi Narayan, in Ayodhya you have Sita and Ram, Ek Patni Sita, he has his wife, there are children, Ram, Lakshman, right? Shatrughna, and Bharat. So, but there's conjugal seva, this is after all seva, but it's restricted to one Sita. Not even extended to the Yajna Sitas, and we hear the Dandakaranya Rishis, the Yajna Sitas, enamored by the beauty of Ramachandra, are imbued with erotic sentiments, and they're told that can only be realized in Krishna Lila. So from there, the Ek Patni, one wife, is extended in Dwaraka to 16,108 wives or queens. And it's Swayam Prakash of Krishna. They all are identical to Krishna. His Prakash Vigrahas, as described by Rupa Goswami, look identical to Krishna, as opposed to Vilas Vigraha, like Balaram or Forearm Narayan and others. The Prakash Vigrahas, they're identical to Krishna. But now, 16,108 queens, but that means Svakya, married. And we have to go to Mathura, Vrindavan, by extension Radhakund, for Parakya, Bhav. So, with the Gopi Gan, Braja Gopis, of whom the leader is Srimati Radharani. So, we have three basic gradations. The Lakshmi Gan of Vaikuntha, Mahishi Gan, queen section of Dwaraka, Gopi Gan in Vrindavan, the Gopi group. What was that in response to?
Super, super subjective is the highest expression.
Oh, about super, super subjective realm. A Prakriti Lila. Adhoksaja realm, and the highest part of the Adhoksaja realm, the Aprakriti Lila of Krishna, the human-like pastimes of Krishna. Krishnera Jateka Kela Sarvatam Nara Lila. Sarvatam Nara Lila, Nara Bapu, Taharaswarup, Gopavesh, Venukar, Navakishore, Natabar, Nara Lila Hoy, Anurup, Narlila, human-like pastimes, Gopavesh, dressed as a cowherd, Venukarp, playing on the flute, Navakishore, right? Advaitama Chudamanadam Anantarupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha is the Adi Purush, the original person, but Navayovana, eternally youthful. Hare Krishna.